Good morning, Waiheke. Welcome to Island Life. I'm your host this morning, Chris, and we'll be taking a look at Waiheke people, events and issues. We've got with us this morning Di Studdard from Waiheke Library. We'll be talking to Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Resources Trust about their Sustainability Festival, and later on we'll be joined by our opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, with their tongue-in-cheek look at what's going on around the island and the world. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Welcome to Island Life, people, events, issues, and I'm joined this morning by, where are we, there we go, Di from Waiheke Library. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, Chris, good morning.
So, a busy time for you at the library, and you're here to bring us up to date with what's going on, and yep, all that's happening down there, and your crowded little box.
Yeah, I know. It is a crowded little box. People say, oh, I love this place so much. And I think it's a concrete box, really, with a window down the side. But people love coming in, and the shelves are pretty empty at the moment with all the holiday makers over. The statistics on the door counter are off the, you know, off the planet. They're, you know, 700 a day, just under 700. 600, which is our busiest time. So while libraries in town become quiet, we ramp it up a bit. So it's all good. You know, lots of holiday makers using the Wi-Fi, lots of people using the free internet.
Your Wi-Fi bill must be through the roof, right? Because, I mean, day or night, you go down to the courtyard and here they are huddled up in the little couch in the hallway or in the outside or, you know, in the Adjad's canopy there. Yep. But no matter what time you go down there, you'd be at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's someone there online.
It's a pretty amazing service, I must say. Yeah, from 7 o'clock in the morning. It's supposed to only be till 8 o'clock at night. So in town, of course, there's a few big sites that are 24 hours. Ours isn't supposed to be, so but I'm not sure.
Well, let's not, you know, keep on telling people around here, don't ask questions that you don't want to know the answer to.
Yeah, so anyway, that's, I mean, it's a wonderful service, but it makes our little site incredibly busy with cords to trip over and people trying to, you know, to charge up their laptops and people Skyping their auntie in Italy or something. And it can be quite invasive, because when you're talking on, you know, on Skype or something, or even a cell phone, your voice just goes up and it's like, you just need to, you know, speak a bit quieter or go outside. But anyway, it's just part of being a small place. And we will have the new library, of course, will have a quiet study area, and it'll have places where people can do that, but not, you know, intrude on other people's listening space. So that will be cool, but that's a little way away. So yeah, really, really busy, but that's really good. We've got the inaugural summer reading program, Dare to Explore, which is system, you know, Auckland Council wide with 55 libraries involved, including now Great Barrier Island. And there's 5,000 children across the system who have signed up for the program, and they put a lot of money into it because council's one of their key, you know, kind of goals is to be looking after children and families, children and teens really. So they've really put a lot of money and a lot of effort into our summer reading program. So it's very, very successful. It's still not too late to register if children would like to, from 5 to age 13.
Oh, my boy's been into it. He's in fact, he's drawn his one of the challenges is, you know, to draw your ideal library, and he's drawn that, and he's taking it down this morning to get his stamp.
Oh, yeah, to get a stamp.
Yeah, it's got you'll be sad to know that the librarians have been replaced by robots.
Oh, yeah. Well, people do think our job's been lessened by the day, but will always be needed. So it's there's a whole combination of reading, obviously, to encourage, you know, summer reading, but also all sorts of fabulous, you know, little other activities that they do as part of that program. So coming into the library in your togs and having a photo of yourself taken at the beach, say.
Oh, don't you love it? I love seeing the tourists wander around town in their togs like it's okay.
Yes.
And you think, oh, come on, you wouldn't. It's just great.
Yeah, you can go to the supermarket in your togs. It's like, it's very okay here.
Yeah.
And actually, on this coming Wednesday at the library, as part of the summer reading program for the Go Aquabit, all the librarians have been encouraged to come along in beach wear, but it's still, we can't show our midriffs or, you know, that kind of thing. But I think I'll probably find a sarong or two that I can make myself look a little bit beachy. Anyway, so that's that. If you do, it's easy to register, and you can do it online and come into the library and pick up the folder that you do get. And also, when you just start, there's a few things to do to kind of get yourself to the party as well. And we've got a fabulous party coming up on Saturday, the 21st of January, as part of that summer reading program. So that might be a little carrot for the kids to, you know,
so
achieve.
And that's happening at the library, that party?
Yes, yeah. For an hour on 3 o'clock. But you get all that information when you, go and register. Okay, so I wanted to also focus on the e-readers because... I know a couple of my friends got the Kindle for Christmas with a nice leather case and everything. And, so there is a problem with the Kindle. A lot of people, around the world, this is a around the world problem, not just Auckland libraries, where the Kindle is not compatible with library catalogues.
Because they use a proprietary e-book file format, don't they?
Yeah, I'm not sure the technicality, but it just... I think there might be some protection of what they have. And it is going to happen eventually, apparently, because there is discussions going on. But at the moment, you can't use your Kindle with our library system either. So, and there are people go, So, you know, that's that bit.
Yeah,
just let people know.
It's the whole wicked world of tying file formats to devices so that you have to use particular sales outlets.
So I mean, you know, obviously the e-book is pretty cheap to buy compared to buying an ordinary book, but nevertheless. But anyway, Naya at work, she has a Kobo. Oh no, she has a Nook, and there's another young teenage man who's, you know, just bought one. It's coming from overseas, and he's really excited about. He's got the Kobo coming, so I'll have a look at that today.
And what about iPads? Plenty of people with those. Do they work?
Plenty. Yeah, plenty. Yes, they are compatible.
Yeah.
So just wanting to let people know that there's thousands of titles in the catalogue. All they have to put in the search box is downloadable media, takes them to the digital library. All the instructions are there. It's pretty simple. And, just go for it.
And what, does it just expire after a period of time?
Yeah, naturally, you've got 2 weeks, and it... naturally will just shut you down. You can't read it after that. It still will be on your device, but then you have to yourself just delete it because it's not going to be usable anyway. And so it's quite handy really, and you can have 5 books at once, e-books at once. So just to, you know, there'll be lots of people I think with a new device and may not know that they can use the library catalogue, or that we do have e-books available for people. And it's not just for adults, you know, there's children's stuff and teens. And for the teens, there's also curriculum material, which is pretty, you know, pretty neat. All the classics are there. And for the children, there's, you know, nice things. If you're doing a lot of travelling in the holidays, you can download them onto whatever device they have. Yeah, so I think it's incredibly... you know, obviously growing area of the library world. Yeah.
So do you get interaction between you and people who are getting, say, digital books? So do people come into the library and ask you about that and have interaction with libraries to download those things and get them, or do they just do it online?
They do it online at home, but if they have a device that, like the iPad or whatever, they can just bring it into our wireless network, you see, and just do it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, but then they will ask us, and there's we have a downloadable flyer, you know, like the information about how to do it. So they come and pick up that, and really out of all of us, it's only Naya who actually has one, and you know, reads books like that. But I just think it's exciting, and I try to encourage people to go into that part of the catalogue and use it. Really, yeah, and especially for teenagers who might not want to read a book, but happy to, say, listen to it on an iPod or something as well, and learn that way as another way of learning what they have to do at school.
Yeah. This is our, let's kind of throw this one at you, but it is our first talk for 2012. Have you started to kind of plan out your big events for the year?
Because I do have those 2 big events. I have the New Zealand Book Month, where we have One Island, One Book, and we're all, you know, encouraging many locals as possible to read the one book. And then we have the big discussion. And this year, we have chosen the book, but it's not going to tell you yet. And so that's always pretty exciting. And then, of course, there's the big thing in May where we have New Zealand Music Month. So those are the two, you know, the big things in the first half of the year anyway that I'm focusing on, already gathering musicians to play for each Saturday. And it's always a bit of a drama choosing the book for One Island, One Book. It's a big responsibility.
I know, because the first year, wasn't it? The first year was quite controversial because a lot of people thought, oh, my God, it's a bit depressing.
Yes, I know. It's always about death or something. People say, oh, New Zealand wine has always got, you know,
yeah,
death
that gothic
involved.
Touch, yeah,
yeah. So anyway, and actually this one has a little bit of that as well. But it's not focusing so much on that. But last year's was, you know, there was a teen suicide in the book. And, yeah, so, and it's, I try and find a book that also will have another element to it so we can choose another activity. You know, like last year we had Carl Nixon's plays were, you know, played at the theatre. And so there's another, try and bring another element in. And I'm wanting to involve the primary schools and high schools. So we have one island, one book, but we also hopefully will end up with one school, one book, so that all the kids are reading one book either through their teachers or in the library at school. Or so I think that's pretty exciting to get the whole island kind of buzzed around it.
Yeah,
extending
and,
on that.
Okay, and of course the other big thing is that you'll be operating in the midst of a construction site sometime this year.
I know, they must be breaking the dirt in the middle of winter by the sounds
of it.
Yeah,
I think they gave notice to the tenants for June, didn't they, of the studio. So
we'll see. And it's interesting because when you look at the plans, you know, the building itself comes right into the courtyard. You know, the point of the library is, you know, even past where the upcycle ladies are. You know, it's kind of like right in there. You go, oh, wow. It's, and quite, yeah, it is. It's right in the courtyard. It's quite interesting. Yeah, and I'm pleased. We are actually really pleased. We've got our full square footage, you know, square meterage now, which is good. 800 square metres, which is... had been chopped down a little bit with the other design. So, yeah, we are excited.
Good stuff. So that's all to come.
All
busy,
to come.
A busy year, 2012.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll be hearing from you take turns, don't you?
Yes, every 3 weeks.
So you and Nio and Rhiannon. So every 3 weeks. So, yeah, so tune in on the, I'll have to figure that out, the 28th. And we'll have another update from Waiheke Library.
Cool. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers.
Have a good day.
The Waiheke Sustainability Festival, from the 16th to the 22nd of January, showcasing community groups, local initiatives and awesome products and services to help households, individuals and businesses reduce their impact on the environment. Festival highlights include the Junk to Funk 7-Day Challenge, Ready Steady Cook Waiheke Style at the Goldie Room on January the 20th, a Pecha Kucha evening with short talks from 8 inspiring speakers on January 21st. And a Sunday market at Artworks on Sunday the 22nd of January with free bike repairs, live entertainment, local food, a record and CD sale, ideas for sustainable living and more. Waiheke Sustainability Festival, January 16th to 22nd. For more information and booking, visit www.wrt.org.nz or call 372 2915.
It's Keisha Castle-Hughes and you're listening to Waiheke Radio on 107.4, 88.3 FM.
Coming up on the 14th through to the 22nd of January is a first for the island, our inaugural sustainability festival brought to you by the Waste Resources Trust. So this is a pretty ambitious program they have of events all focusing on sustainability. So here to talk a little bit about what that actually means and what's going on in the festival is Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Resources Trust. Hold on, let's turn on your mic. There we go. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thank you. So a sustainability festival is all about what?
It's all about promoting and showcasing the different aspects of sustainability on the island and how we can live sustainably, and we do live sustainably, and how we can be a bit of a model for sustainable to the kind of greater New Zealand community as well.
Okay, and I mean, you know, it's I suppose a bit of a buzzword, you know, sustainability, and yeah, we're sustainable because we're on an island and aren't we fantastic? But, well, I mean, what are the kind of things actually going on that you think we can showcase?
Well, we looked at a bunch of different areas. We thought about food resilience and waste minimisation and just kind of that whole concept of what does sustainability mean is actually part of what we're looking at. We've got a whole range of different events that should... There should be something for everyone, from kids to adults and everywhere in between. And I really think that there'll be an issue that you might be able to find something that you're interested in the event.
So people are going to kind of bring to this their own interpretations of sustainability and what that means. So it's kind of, I suppose in the end it's about what sustaining the local community and the environment.
Yeah, and all that means. So it's people and the local economy, supporting our local businesses, and also the environment is always kind of under all of that for us.
And as I said in the introduction, you've got a pretty ambitious program for the week, haven't you?
Yeah, we do. It's been fun pulling it all together, and it is coming together nicely. So we kind of put a call out to the community to say, we'll put this event on, but also come to us with things. And that's worked out really well. We've had a whole bunch of different people turn up out of the woodwork, and organisations like yourself, Waiheke Radio, have said they'd like to get involved with your record and CD and DVD sale. So,
yeah, because that's recycling, you see.
That's recycling, yeah. Exactly. That's your definition of sustainability.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've got us, and what other groups have come on board?
Well, we've got a group called the Waiheke Sailing Project, who are have been working on this idea of setting up a boat that could be used for bringing stuff to the island, so by sail instead of relying on the barge, but also how else that could be used. So maybe it could be a sailing school as well, and teaching people about boat design. So that's one group. We've got a bunch of demos and open homes happening. We've got some hobbyist beekeepers who are going to let people go and see what they do in Rocky Bay. We've got Island Coffee opening up their roasting from one morning. We've got heaps of people coming to the market. We've got Helen from Herbal Health is going to do some weed walks at the market. Upcycle are right in there with a bunch of things. They're doing a plastics transformed exhibition, as well as Bee is running Junk to Funk as well.
So Junk to Funk is an iconic island event, and you've revamped it this year. That's one of the key pieces of the festival, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And it runs from the 14th to the 21st, and so that makes it a 7-day challenge. And it is quite different from last time. You kind of used to be able to just make what you wanted out of whatever, and there was a catwalk show. This time you will get a mystery bag of things, and everyone will get the same things, and you will have 7 days to make whatever you like out of those materials plus any others.
So it's moving away from necessarily being a fashion show into kind of a creation.
That's right. Yep. Still totally up for accepting wearable entries, but if you're not into wearable entries, then make something else.
Yeah, so that is quite different. Yeah. And then all of those entries are all going to be showcased at the market?
That's right. They'll come in on the 21st and they'll be judged, and then we'll have a parade through the market on the 22nd, and prize giving as well at the market.
Oh, that'll be good. So that's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
So so I suppose people can still plan, can't they? Because they can kind of get, I suppose, a rough idea, and then they can incorporate the items
totally
into it.
Yep. So if you've got a great idea for something that, an object that you might, you know, a usable thing that you might have a brilliant idea for but haven't quite managed to get it off, definitely come and register, and we'll chuck some things your way, and it should be lots of fun.
So it's kind of like the sculpture version of the 48-hour film festival.
That's right.
You get given a theme and certain items you have to incorporate.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
And so, will you have different categories, like for children and adults and that kind of thing?
Yeah, those are the only categories this year. So there's age categories, and because we've opened it up, you can do it as an individual or as teams. There's also a category for teams, but there aren't any wearable or usable categories. It's kind of the kids against each other and the adults against each other.
And what prompted the change? Was Junk to Funk getting tired? Was it getting unwieldy? What was it?
Yeah, I think it's always good to change things up, and it might go back to the runway show again in the future. We'd been kind of talking about other ways to take it to other groups, and we had this idea for Junk to Funk, the next generation, which was a school-based program. And then when we were looking at the idea of a festival, we really wanted to include Junk to Funk in it, because as you said, it's a really iconic event and people really miss it if it doesn't happen. So this was a way that it would fit nicely into the week-long festival.
So, okay, now you're going to be coming in each week or next week as well. Actually, next week's when it gets started, isn't it, to give us a bit more of an update.
Junk to Funk will be starting next Saturday.
Next Saturday, yeah. and then the rest of the events in the week following that.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've got some ticketed events that people probably need to get on top of pretty quickly as well.
Totally. We've got two ticketed events. One of them is the Petra Kucha, which is the Small Talks, which is eight inspiring speakers giving short, snappy, inspiring 10-minute speeches. We've got a bunch of awesome people lined up for that, including some neat islanders. We've got Luke Carey and Bunny from Greenpeace. And then we've got some people from off-island as well. We've got Sam Judd from Sustainable Coastlines, who do some great clean-up work around the Hauraki Gulf. And then the other really exciting ticketed event is the Ready Steady Cook Waiheke style event. So I don't know if anyone knows the Ready Steady Cook program that happens on television. It pairs two teams off and they get a bag of stuff. The chefs get a bag of stuff and they have a bunch of time to make some amazing things. And so we've kind of taken that idea. We're going to put some, there's going to be two challenges, some personalities versus each other and then some chefs versus each other, and they will get a range of local ingredients and have half an hour to cook a meal in front of a live audience.
That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's at Goldie Room. The ticket price is $35, but it includes some wine and also some canapes made from local food.
No, that's going to be really good. And, yeah, a nice idea. And you've got, so who have you got lined up for that? Or
Denise,
is it a surprise?
Well, no. In terms of the personalities, I'm happy to confirm Denise Roche, who isn't maybe the best cook, but she will be great comedy value up against John Hawkesby, who we know is a foodie and an awesome talker. So that should be lots of fun.
Yeah, okay, that's going to be good. And I think probably Denise, now that she's in Parliament, is going to be what the second caller for all events following John Hawkesby for these things, isn't she?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, well, that looks great. A great program. And then all coming to a head with this market on the 22nd, which is going to be a really big event and quite different, I think, from some of the other markets that are on around the island. So people can go to your website, which is
www.wrt.org.nz, and I think there's a link from the homepage straight to the Sustainability Festival page.
Yep. And your office down in the Artworks Courtyard, how often is that open, or is that
we're open
random?
Monday to Friday, every day in the week, kind of 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. But we're also going to be setting up ticket sales at the market as well, and the Lazy Lounge is selling tickets for us as well.
Yeah. Okay. So check that out and pop in there, give them a call, check out the website, and please do get involved. And you're still open for people to get involved with the market and that kind of thing?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. We've got a big call for volunteers on. If anyone's keen to come and help us, there's a bunch of jobs that we'd love people to take on. So come and talk to us or give us an email.
Yeah. And you can, if you listen out to the Waiheke Radio Community Notice Board, you can hear that call for volunteers on there as well. So the contact information there for you. All right, thank you very much, daughter.
Awesome, thank you.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that festival coming up and the start of it really in just a week's time. So all right, you're on Island Life. Stay tuned. Coming up later in the show, we're going to have our opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
What do you mean you're not on Twitter? twitter.com/waihikiradio.
It's the first Saturday for the month and first Saturday for the year, actually. So I'm joined, as we always are on the first Saturday of the month, by the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone. And we'll just do some mic tests here.
Good morning. How's that?
We've got Alex, and what about you, Alan?
Good morning and happy birthday, Chris.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, you don't look a day over 23.
Oh, well, you could say that.
Yeah, well done.
You'd be lying, but yeah. Yeah, so okay, we've got both of you on air, which is a great thing.
Hooray, great to be back.
All right, so, 2012, the year in review.
Yes, how's it all been so far? up. Well, obviously, you know, there was last Sunday, which I don't recall a great deal of. But apart from that, this year has been pretty good so far, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. I like the waves on the beach have been my highlight of the year so far. Good surfing at Palm Beach, and there's a big heavy swell coming in. I think it's already dealt to the arena, but there are big waves coming in for later on today, I think. I just have that feeling.
Is this the day we finally see the doomed ship fall in two bits? And
it must do, yeah.
Yeah, the forecast is for some big winds this afternoon.
Yeah.
Gale warning in force for the Gulf.
Oh.
But yeah, there has been some great body surfing going on down at Little O and Palm Beach.
No, it's been good. So the big sort of question is whether one goes for the purest surfing or uses all the paraphernalia, you know?
And do you think that it's been what the tourists expect, the turn up? You know, where's the sun?
Exactly.
I think it's been quite good for Onaroa shops, because on a rainy day like today, you try to get through Onaroa and everyone seems to think if the weather closes down, they're going to have a cup of coffee and a muffin or something, because all the cafes seem to be really, really busy on rainy
word
days.
Word from most of the cafes, restaurants, bars, etc., is that it's been a fantastic summer.
Well, I was talking to someone earlier who said that they were at Ricky's last night and it was packed.
Yes.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. And
up where I work, it's been right through from before Christmas. It's been standing room only, so long as you don't mind standing on top of the people who are already there standing already. It's been unbelievable. Yeah. I've always wondered what it would be like to have that place going at full capacity, and now I'm finding out.
But we always predicted that there'd be a downturn in overseas tourism and an upturn in domestic tourism for this summer, and I think we're seeing that. And this summer's been good with a combination of sunny days and rainy days. So sunny days you do the beach, rainy days you go and use the local restaurants. And good, yeah, it's all good.
And I think surprisingly, after last year where we had that big uptake or increase in the number of those kind of hospitality businesses, that actually they're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them have got through.
Yes, because I mean, this time last year we were all marvelling at the way in which Onaroa has suddenly sort of found its heart and soul and come into its own as what it should always have been. And that's a great place to go up and down, go shopping, get coffee and meals and stuff. And very impressive how many of those businesses have survived through the winter and are now booming.
There'll be an interesting additional element to Onaroa this year with the library development, you know, and that could turn...
Well, the development of trucks and diggers and bulldozers and that.
In the short term, yeah. Yes. But the new building will be interesting, and hopefully the rehousing of places like the Resource Trust in what is now the existing library could work for everybody, yeah. Because those offices are a little... How do we put it diplomatically?
Yeah, I won't say what I was going to say.
Yes. I won't say the first word that came into my head.
Yeah,
either.
We used to be located in one of those, and they are not fit for human habitation.
Yeah, nope. They're about...
No, you wouldn't keep farmyard animals in them.
No. Nope.
Talking about habitation, this summer's been... I've seen a lot of rats around, so maybe that should be our mission for this year is getting rid of rats. Just driving here, the car was smelling funny, so I popped the bonnet, and on top of the hot engine block was a whole bunch of nectarine pips that the rats take that night.
Oh, no.
To keep themselves warm and nibble on the pips, but they get baked on the top of the car. It gives it a strange kind of aroma.
Our cat has been bringing in a lot of rats.
Oh, good.
So yes, they do seem to be booming.
I caught one the other day, which was quite a strange... I put out a trap most as often as I can, and I got one the other day, and it was actually a beautiful creature. It was in incredible good condition. I think it's been living on the crusts of bread in our compost bin, but I've never seen a rat in such good condition.
Ah, the ones that live in the compost bins are always the most impressive.
Yeah,
beautiful. They get enormous.
I had this interesting idea, is how about if we caught all the rats and made the Waiheke fur? We could make fur coats out of all this beautiful... Because it really was beautiful fur. And this rat was...
I think that would be a hard sell to the fashion set.
I know, but could you imagine?
An elegant rat skin coat.
Yeah, but this rat was beautifully white underneath and beautifully sort of pale brown on the top. It was beautiful fur. And yeah, you're right. It'd be the ultimate marketing challenge to sell this thing, you know?
But it'd be a unique... Yes, you could just get away with that. But I can see certain sort of... image problems with trying to sell the idea of
rape. We talk about unique Waihikian products.
And the Sustainability Festival is coming up, Alex.
That's right.
Yes!
You know, there's a market day. You've got an opportunity.
I could arrive with a... you could start off with like a bomber jacket with a red skin fluff around the collar. But still, you know. It sounds one of those interesting marketing ideas for the new year, but let someone else try it. But the idea's out there. I'm happy to give people ideas.
You know what to do? Stick some nectarines outside your garage, rev up your car, set some traps, and away you
go.
Who gets to skin them, though?
Well, there might be some unemployed chap on the island who'd be interested in.
Position the rat skinner wanted.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what we're always doing on the island, looking for some unique propositions to sell ourselves, and there's one.
Yep. Yep, okay.
We'll let you know how Alex gets on with his new rat.
Moving right along. So we're talking about 2012.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is the silly season, and, you know, there's plenty of silliness going on, but the politics are still there as well, aren't they? And, I mean, the topic of the moment seems to be the food bill, which all of a sudden is the top of everyone's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the same as everyone else, but I'm totally bemused, confused, don't know what the hell's going on with this thing. Can anyone enlighten me?
Well, that seems to be the course for this thing. I was in a shop the other day and someone was asking about the petition, and I kind of cringed as the woman behind the counter made a complete mess of attempting to describe anything that bore the slightest relationship to what was actually going on.
Mm. Most of the rather overwrought people that I've talked to about it seem to believe that once this bill is slid through Parliament while we're all attempting to sun ourselves on the beaches, this will sort of allow Monsanto to basically run the country and make hamburger patties out of our children and all this sort of stuff. And it's, but, you know, the people that I've run into who are talking about this are the people who get worked up over absolutely everything. Mm. And there's that sort of element of hysterical panic to it, and self-righteousness and so forth. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, you know, once you actually look at it, it's not even being passed yet. It's just going for a first reading. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the reasons that the press haven't covered it, because there was a lot of talk about, oh, you see, you know, the press won't even go there. It's basically because there wasn't really much of a story to begin with. And when it did emerge in the press, of course, it turns out that this has multi-party support. It's not something that the National Party are doing in cahoots with their corporate masters or anything. It's everyone seems perfectly happy with this.
But I understood it started off as a private member's idea, a private member's bill from Sue Kedgley. And where I see it is one of those things where loyal, rather noble intentions, with a high possibility of being applied imperfectly, because the base idea is to tidy up the food supply chain.
Yeah, so, and there appears to be some poor drafting, and, you know, and that's where some of those concerns have come from.
But
I've been surprised to see that, you know, the information about the petition that's been run at the moment is like, oh, this is all going to happen, you know, while we're not looking. But I mean Parliament doesn't even sit until February, and it's still got a number of stages to go through, so there does appear to be a touch of panic as well.
But will it the thing I'm not sure of is, will it, the person that makes homemade chutneys and jams and sells them at the market or the roadside, will this bill put them out of business? Because that's what people are saying to me.
And if you're sitting there by the roadsides, you know, selling homegrown produce or swapping seeds with your various neighbours or anything, who will be found to police that?
Yeah. Imagine being the homegrown chutney police. That'd be interesting.
What colour light would they have on the car?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. You could imagine a sort of a lurid brown thing. You could have like an old chutney jar with this sticky stuff still sticking on the inside and the light revolving slowly inside of that. It would all be quite appropriate.
But I found it no surprise. I was in Auckland the other day and I walked past the tiny remnants of that whole Occupy debacle that's going on there, which basically amounts to a bunch of crusties sitting in bad tents getting wet and cold. And they had already put up vast amounts of billboards talking about the food bill and everything. And I was tempted to sort of stop and talk to them, but then I had a look at some of them and thought, oh, no, who needs it?
No, I don't think it's not really their territory. I think the one criticism the Occupy people have had to face is that they're not focused enough in their protest, and to extend to the food bill doesn't appear to be what they were there for in the first place. You know, I often thought if they'd given themselves much more specific targets to or things to talk about, it would have helped their cause. You know, they say corporate greed's a bad thing, which, okay. But what if they campaigned that, I don't know, for instance, that it was totally unacceptable for a CEO's salary to be more than, I don't know, 10 times the salary of the lowest paid person in that organization. You know, just things like that. So we had actual figures, actual numbers. We had a real thing that we knew that they were campaigning about.
But I mean, really, if you go over to town and you look at the people doing that Occupy movement, these are not the brightest people around. I was unimpressed by what I saw, and I expected to see a bunch of waste of space.
No, I was impressed. I went to a showing of locally made documentary clips at the Waiheke Cinema the other day, and one of those clips was, I forget who made it, but it was a locally made documentary clip, and this guy had interviewed the leader of the Occupy movement in Auckland. And this leader was very lucid, and the clip was very clear, showed what they were about, and showed the guy had, I thought the guy was quite impressive, the leader guy. Yeah.
Well, I was amused by that piece in the paper a couple of weeks ago where there was disquiet amongst the local Occupy movement because some of the original people felt that there were elements creeping in that weren't really our kind of people. Is that brilliant? Even the revolution's got snobs.
Yeah. What I felt sorry for the poor buggers, you know, There were jokes last year about occupying the beaches over summer in response to the whole seabed and foreshore thing, and the poor Occupy protesters have spent their summer in city squares where they could be occupying much nicer places.
Occupying a beach, yes. Yeah. I think if they try and get there, though, you know, once the weather clears up, they'll find the beaches have already been occupied by other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people on the beaches, aren't there? I mean, the holidaymakers making the most of it. Yeah.
Well, yes, you know, only Tangi Beach yesterday. God, there must have been 20 or 30 people on the beach. It was crowded. The holidaymakers, though, just getting back to them, you know, it intrigues me to wonder what's going on behind the doors of the rental properties on the island as these families have all arrived in their enormous insecurity mobiles with the entire family, and now they're all stuck indoors. How are you getting on there, folks? How long will it be until we have a family who've actually all strangled one another because they're all stuck indoors together on the island?
I had a nice experience with an insecurity mobile. Nice word that. It was. I think it's written in the sky somewhere that if you drive a Porsche Cayenne, you can have two parking spaces every time you like.
Absolutely.
Because when I went to find a parking down at the beach, there was a Porsche Cayenne diagonally taking up two.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, well, yes. If you're the kind of person who drives a Porsche Cayenne, you think the world revolves around you, and you can
pay a lot of money for one of those.
Yeah, you've got to have two parts. So I think it's written in the sky. It's just one of those things. Yeah,
but it's amazing how some of the vehicles, I mean, this year has been really noticeable. There are a lot of these enormous brand new insecurity mobiles, and they really do. They just seem to me to project their owners' insecurities.
I wonder how many of them will go as mortgagee sales quite soon, because I figure a lot of these cars are on the mortgage, and there are a lot of stretched mortgages.
Who the hell's going to buy them, though?
Yeah, well, they'll be giving them away soon because you need to run the damn things.
But if you're the kind of sort of dreary, overpaid, inadequate who feels that four-wheel drive is just so important when you're driving through Newmarket, and that's your vehicle of choice, it is pretty sad. Mm. And, of course, the ultimate in sadness is the chap who turns up every year on the island with a Hummer. Yeah. I mean, mate, you know, we feel for you. We really do. Your insecurities are so blatantly displayed. But, you know, they have pills and potions and things for that kind of problem nowadays. So, you know, just check your email. They're always asking if anyone wants that kind of help. Because well, that's probably what you need.
Maybe we could offer that as a Waiheke Radio. This is another Waiheke business idea that we could sort out insecurity. We could do, you know, come to Waiheke and get your insecurity sorted, but leave your Porsche Cayenne or your Hummer behind.
Yes, or we could set up a sort of a conversion business where if you want your if you want to blend in on the island, you can have a sort of a simple place, a bit like the car wash, only it's a car dirtying place where you know, for a modest fee, we will drape your car in dust, tree sap, cobwebs, fill the back seat with dog hair
and some rat carcasses on the engine.
Oh yes, yes, a few of your nectarine pips on the engine to make it smell nice, and you know, you'll be fitting in perfectly in no time at all.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But it is really interesting to see all these cars that have actually been washed driving around the place.
Yeah, I don't know, you open my car door and just get you get drowned in sand and ice block wrappers.
Exactly.
Well, maybe we could call all the good folk of Waiheke to return the beaches, you know, like we could have an annual just get the young sand dune out of your the floor of your car and return it to the beach kind of thing.
Yes.
That would be fun, eh?
Just comb the dog out and get some of that sand back where it belongs.
Yeah, it's all good.
So are we willing to make any predictions for 2012? What are we going to see on the island in the coming year?
Well, of course, we've already mentioned the redevelopment of the library.
Yeah.
Imagine it'll be interesting to see what happens when the new budget comes through for roading. Because we've seen some pretty ludicrous projects going on. Some bits of road are cracking up entirely, whilst others that seemed fine are being dug up and replaced. But of course, you've got that. You know, I forget what the actual formula is for the stuff they use on the roads. I think it's that sort of funny crumbly stone plus spit and peanut butter or something is what they use to put it all together. And so I think we'll continue to see roads cracking up. And then as the budget all gets spent, we'll see that weird thing that happens towards the end of the year. Oh, my God, we've got to spend all the money. So where can we put a new piece of curb in where it wasn't really needed?
The thing that amazes me is how roads crack up so quickly. Hill Road next to us was redone about 2 years ago, and it's breaking up again.
Yeah.
And the Romans built roads, how many, thousands of years ago, and they're still around.
Oh, yeah, but hold on. I mean, I've walked on one of those Roman roads, and it's an exaggeration to say
it's a road.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a road.
But
I mean, you know,
they last, you know. Yeah. Our roads don't last.
But then, you know, the Romans weren't using things like wallpaper paste to hold them together.
True, true.
I think they were using proper things.
Going back to what we're going to see on Waiheke, one of my predictions, it's been happening a lot last year, is Fuller's boats breaking down. You know, and we used to joke last year, what happens, you know, they always had the jet raider as the old trusty standby, and if a boat broke down, they could go and fire up the jet raider and pick up a few disgruntled passengers. But just before Christmas in late November and early December, that happened, and the jet raider broke down itself.
Spectacularly.
Yeah, a couple
fact.
Of times.
Yes, with a loud bang.
But my concern and prediction for this year is I think we're going to see all three of the Fuller's boats, the Superflight, the Quick Cat, and the jet raider, breaking down more regularly, and I don't know what's going to happen. Is Fuller's going to have to get a new boat, or there's something's going to have to be done about the reliability, because all three of those have now become unreliable.
But then, you know, I personally feel sorry for a company that has done quite valiantly trying to keep an incredibly tight schedule going on those boats.
Yeah, it's almost they've got too many boats running.
Maintenance on those things is very complex. You have to get them to a place where they can be maintained. It costs a lot of money. That means the boat's out of service. So that'll have people complaining.
Yeah, there's no denying that. I think they're trying their best. This is not a criticism of Fuller's. I just think it's... I'm just wondering what's going to happen, you know.
Because I'm always amazed by the commuters you hear who treat Fuller's like it's some kind of public service to which they are completely entitled. And when anything goes even slightly wrong, they do this sort of, they drum their heels and get all upset about it. It's like, well, come on, maintaining those great big boats is not easy. Buying a new one is not something you can do lightly.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody forced any of us to come and live here. We live here by choice, and one of the things we have to deal with is that our connection to the mainland is a ferry service, which they're struggling to keep the thing affordable, and sooner or later something's going to give, which we saw last year when they had a couple of really quite major problems with boats.
But that's it. They've got through the Christmas period. I haven't heard of any blow-ups over the Christmas period.
No, and the boats have been packed.
Yeah,
really amazingly.
But that's because you haven't been on the boat, so you don't care.
True. Yes.
Well, we don't get the stories, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think Alan and I both get stories of locals. I haven't heard any visitor boat stories yet, because we don't see so many of them. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So we're predicting the collapse of the ferry fleet.
No, not the collapse. I'm just wondering whether they're going to make it through this year safely. Yeah.
Yes, without having to do something drastic. Yeah.
The other thing that hasn't happened yet, I don't know if it's just a gentle reminder or it's what it means, but remember Denise Roche said she would resign from the community board so we could have a community board by-election.
But
that hasn't happened yet. So is she going to be trying to do both, or is it just slipped in
February, I think she's going to resign. The new plan.
Yeah.
Well, this will be interesting to watch as this by-election actually starts up. Who will run?
Well, Herb Romanuk and Andy Spence have both put their hats in. And
so highbrow value versus eyebrow value.
Yeah.
So far.
But for me, that would be enough. If just the two of them run, we'd have the two major elements of the island community covered, i.e. the environmental versus the materialistic.
Yes. Comfortable, well-heeled.
And that would be enough.
Let's not rule out another return from Alan Davis, who just has to run. Some kind of imperative, you know, like spawning salmon. If there's an election going, he's got to run for it. Nor should we rule out...
Noble Angela?
No, I think we can probably rule him out. But also there's Paul Cavalry Charge Walden.
He might come back.
Who I think is very likely going to put his hat in the ring. Of course, you know, any of you who are thinking of doing this, don't forget I will be covering this election quite comprehensively on One Way Hickey website. And you're welcome to come and talk to me. Otherwise, I'll just make it up. You have been warned.
There's something about island politics that intrigues me. I was doing some research here, but I'm always interested in other islands. And I read about an island that was described thus. It's like hell after the fire has gone out. Imagine the 800 people living on... This is Ascension Island in the northern equatorial Atlantic Ocean, basically in the middle of the Atlantic. But 800 people live there. And there were some kind of interesting parallels with Waiheke, especially in terms of politics. They established themselves a little community board, a local government thing. The island is associated with Britain, but not owned by Britain, so it should be run by itself, but it's not quite. This is what happened. The 800 people voted for their little small parliament or community board or whatever it was. And about 6 months later, they resigned en masse, saying that they were being forced to prop up democracy that did not exist. Which sounded very Waihikian to me.
This sounds intriguing.
The island of Ascension. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's about, I think it's probably as far from anywhere as you can get, isn't it?
Almost.
Without being Pitcairn, yes.
Yeah.
But it's a great... that comment about being like hell with the fires gone out is because it was a volcano and most of it's ash. And it's being invaded by a Mexican thornweed, so it's not... doesn't seem to be the prettiest place, but those 800 people live there and do their best there. You know?
Oh, the other island that was always intrigued me, because I spent a bit of time out there, is Norfolk Island.
Yeah.
You know, one of the nearest islands comparable to us. So their population is a fair bit smaller than ours, maybe a quarter of the size of us. They are self-governing, and the interesting thing about them is they have no income tax.
Good on them.
What do you mean, good on them? You're supposed to be a socialist.
I'd like to. Yeah, you're right. I know that was inconsistent. It just came out without thinking. I better put my... Carry on.
Norfolk Island is a fascinating place, particularly if, you know, you live on Waiheke and you go over there and have a look at it. It's a beautiful spot. It's wonderfully maintained. I think the only tax over there is a 10% import tax on goods. And they have to import a lot, but they do a lot with it. And it is an extremely prosperous place.
But isn't it supported by Australia?
It's an Australian territory, but no, it is self-governing and self-sustaining.
So their finances
are
all local?
Well, you know, this is the thing. It's just that awkward little thing. You get rid of income tax, as places like Hong Kong can tell you, and the place booms, and you get a brilliant economy. But the interesting thing about their government is, I mean, to be in the government, you have to be one of the 14 or 1,500 people on the island who to whom the island actually belongs, and these are the descendants of the Bounty Mutineers who came there via Pitcairn Island. So pretty much everyone on their local government is related to one another.
Sounds a bit...
Yes, it's which makes it really interesting. So family feuds and grudges and things, which may be going back several generations, are a sort of an integral part of the way that the government on the island is run.
There was an interesting movie called Liza's Girlfriend. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
About a small community, where was it, Alaska or somewhere? Or could it be Norway? Some northern place. Anyway, there's a local. There was a local sort of unloved eccentric, and he got himself a blow-up doll, one of these sex dolls. And this blow-up doll became quite an important member of the community because it was quite a small place, and they needed someone to sit in the hairdresser's shop to look like it was busy, so the doll got a job. And then they needed a sort of quiet person to sit on the community board so they wouldn't cause any eruptions. So the doll got elected to this post, which I thought was quite an interesting angle on the local government, to have a blow-up sex doll as one of your community board members. I wonder if we have one of those standing for
maybe we should run one as a candidate.
Yeah. Sort of no speak, no nothing, just sit there, be quiet, let the rest get on with it. But going back to your income tax thing with Norfolk, I found that fascinating. At Ascension Island, they also had no income tax. And then they decided to have an income tax, and they slapped on a 20% or whatever. But everyone on the island got a 20% pay rise. So you ended up staying with the same amount of money but paying tax. Mm. So that's how they got around that.
Although it's, you know, you're going to end up in negative there anyway, because the bureaucracy required to effect that will end up costing you money. So like these things usually do, you'll end up worse off with it.
All right, so there we go. Our first Opinionated Islanders slot for 2012. Thank you very much to both of you for coming in.
Well, and we didn't say much about 2012, but it's just started. Give us time.
We've only had a week.
I mean, I've been sitting here over the last sort of 10 minutes or so just watching the northern side of the island sort of disappearing under mist and cloud. This really does not look like summer, does it?
No.
And the cheery news in the Herald this morning, NIWA have said that these kind of weather patterns are due to continue until March.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah, no worries. And,
you have been listening to Island Life, your weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues here on Waiheke Radio, brought to you by the Village Butchery at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Thanks very much to today's guests, Di Stoddard from Waiheke Library, Daughter Ray from Waiheke Resources Trust, talking about the Sustainability Festival, 14th to the 22nd of January, and our Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. And thank you to you all for listening. Island Life will return next Saturday morning at 10 a.m.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.